You are hearing voices from NPR.
I think the piano maybe is better. I just realised to stop struggling. Hello? Yoko? Yeah.
Welcome to John Ono Lennon, a Hearing Voices special, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Lynn Neary.
Good King Wenceslas, last look out on the feast of Stephen, as the slow ray round about, deep and crispy, brightly showed the boot last night on the musty cruel. Henry Hall and David Lloyd, Betty Grable too.
Hello, this is John speaking with his voice. We're all very happy to be able to talk to you like this on this little bit of plastic. This record reaches you at the end of a really gear year for us, and it's all due to you.
I was so young when they first appeared, out of nowhere it seemed. I had just barely entered adolescence, balancing precariously on the most awkward point of it. Too young to be cool, but wanting desperately to be. Too young really to even understand how very young they were.
Jingle bell. Hello, everybody. This is Paul, and I'd just like to thank you all for buying our records during the past year. We know you've been buying them because the sales have been very good, you see. Don't know where we'd be without you, really, though.
In the army, perhaps.
Oh, we hope you've enjoyed listening to the records as much as we've enjoyed melting them. No, that's wrong. Making them.
They sound so innocent now. Kind of goofy, really.
King Wenceslas last looked down on the feast of Stephen.
Just a gang of guys lifted out of Liverpool into an adventure we'd eventually come to think of as the never-ending magical mystery tour. The rest of us, we were just along for the ride.
Now, yesterday and today, our theater's been jammed with newspapermen and hundreds of photographers from all over the nation, and these veterans agree with me that the city never has witnessed the excitement stirred by these youngsters from Liverpool who call themselves the Beatles. Now, tonight, you're going to twice be entertained by them. Right now and again in the second half of our show. Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Watching them that night on our grainy black and white TV sets, we knew nothing would ever be the same.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you.
There's really no way to explain to kids now what they ushered in, much less what they ushered out. How they changed everything. The music we listened to, the clothes we wore, the way we thought. Sure, my older sisters had introduced me to the existence of jazz and folk music, but somehow the Beatles were mine. For people of a certain age, everything began with them. As they evolved, so did we. And always, one step ahead of all of us, was John.
The next song we'd like to sing... is our latest record. Or our latest electronic noise, depending on whose side you're on. Any road, we'd like to carry on with it. It's the last number. We'd like to thank you all for being so wonderful. And it's called Help. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody.
John was funny and smart and cool, too cool to be contained, even by the Beatles. He wouldn't let himself be petrified into a permanent icon of our youth. So he left the Beatles and wandered down his own path, taking unexpected turns with his music, his politics, and his life. He got married, had a child, and much to our surprise, stayed home to take care of his new son. We never stopped being fascinated, and he never stopped talking. He gave hundreds of interviews over the years. Sometimes he was brash and funny, sometimes arrogant and hostile. His wit was sharp, And when he wanted to, he could wield his words as a weapon. Producer Barrett Golding sifted through many of Lennon's interviews and discovered that, through all the noise, Lennon's message is clear.
What do you want out of life most of all now, John?
Peace, you know. Really, that's all I want.
If anything happened to you, how would you like people to remember you?
As the great peacenicks.
That before your music?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Chance, folks. Give chance a piece. Give peace a chance.
Back in 69, July the 4th, the Plastic Ono Band single Give Peace a Chance, which was number two in Britain, and I think is still regarded by a great number of people as being a bit of a classic. Refresh our memories as to why you put that particular song together, because you've fought for a lot of causes, haven't you, the both of you, over the years?
Yeah, we first did the bed-in in Amsterdam, and the point of the bed-in, in a nutshell, was a commercial for peace, as opposed to a commercial for war, which was on the news every day those days, and the newspapers every day was dismembered bodies and napalm, and we thought, well, why don't they have something nice in the newspapers, that old thing, you know? And anyway, we did the bed-in. What the bed-in was 7 days, because the press were always asking questions, 7 days that they can ask anything, no secrets, you know, no time limit, like, you know, you come in, take the photographs, then the photographers go away, and then the press are allowed 10 minutes to ask. This was, you come in as long as you like, till you've got everything you need to know about John and Yoko, or what we stand for, or what we are.
Hello, John.
Hello.
I hope we didn't wake you up.
No, I've been awake for a bit.
John, what are you doing over in Amsterdam, in bed?
I'm holding a protest, you know. A protest against violence. Most of the newspaper coverage is of the marches in England have just been about the violence between the police and a few people, you know, never came across. But the whole thing's got a bit too serious and a bit too intellectual, you know, and it's all going towards violence, and we're just staging this protest as a protest against all forms of violence, even from the protesters, you know.
Two, one, two, three, four.
One of the most hysterical moments was the first day when Don Short and all the gang and Donald Zeck and all them, they were fighting like crazy. We were sitting in the, you know, Amsterdam Hilton in the bed like two little kids, you know, with all the posters on the wall.
Flower children.
Flower kids or whatever. These guys were sweating to fight to get in first because they thought we were going to be making love in bed, you see. That's where their minds were at. Because we'd be naked, bed,
right.
John and Yoko, sex. So anyway, we did it again. We tried to do it in New York, but the American government wouldn't let us in. They knew we'd done it in Amsterdam, and they didn't want any peaceniks here. But we ended up doing it in Montreal instead and broadcasting across the border, you see, and there was live riots at Berkeley at the bed-in in Amsterdam. But after answering all these questions many times, it got down to all we were saying was give peace a chance, not we have any formula or communism or socialism will answer it or any ism could answer it. We didn't have a format, we couldn't give you a plan.
But just sit
but
down
just consider
and think
the
about
idea.
It.
Of not having this war. Just consider it. So that's what, in a nutshell, we were saying. So we recorded it in the bedroom of the Montreal Hilton or whatever hotel we were in.
On an 8-track machine, which you had brought up to the room, I gather.
Up to the room, yeah, and there was like Tommy Smothers and Tim Leary and Dick Gregory and old people sort of clapping along and singing on the chorus. And if you hear the record, it's funny, actually, because my rhythm senses have always been a bit wild. And halfway through it, I got on the on-beat instead of the back-beat, and it was hard because all that was non-musicians playing along with us. So I had to put a lot of tape echo to double up the beat to keep a steady beat right through the whole record, so it goes boom-boom, boom-boom, instead of bap, bap.
I'm interested in expressing myself, producing something that means something to people in any country, in any language, and at any time in history. And rock just happens to be the media which I was born into. That's all. It was the one.
And this is Johnny Rhythm just saying good night to you all, and God bless you.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe.
Do all the songs that you write or have written in the past, John, have a message?
Well, I think in that way, every song will have a message, you know. I don't sit down and say, what's today's message, you know. I'm either writing about something that happened, you know, I'm either writing about what's going on in the world or what's happening to me, basically.
Nothing's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change my world.
Well, John, I believe you've written a book. And this book's called John Lennon in His Own Right, folks. John Lennon in His Own Right, W-R-I-T, you see, it's a laugh. It's a laugh a minute with John Lennon. Some of you might find it a bit difficult to understand because, you see, it's in a sort of funny lingo. Well, we get it, you see, it's full of laughs. And I don't really know how you could describe it, but... it's sort of rubbish. Maybe that's one way.
Once upon a time, there were two balloons called Jock and Yono. They were strictly in love, bound to happen in a million years. They were together, man. Unfortunate timetable, they seemed to have previous experience, which kept calling them one way or another. You know how it is. But they battled on against overwhelming oddities, including some of their beast friends. Being in love, they clung together even more, man, but some of the poisonous monster of outdated busload hip throwers did stick slightly, and they occasionally had to resort to the dry cleaners. Luckily, this did not kill them, and they weren't banned from the Olympic Games. They lived hopefully ever after, and who could blame them?
The pun is onomatopoeia, the changing...
What?
That's a long word. I tell you, onomatopoeia is, you know, when, like...
That's three words I've heard today.
You know, when I say a word like buzz in the word is capture the noise of the bee, that's onomatopoeia. Your book is full of them, you know what I mean?
Is it? Well, I'm glad to know that. Lots of onomatopoeias. Automatic peer, sounds like to me. That's probably why I'd change words, because I haven't a clue what words mean after that.
So this is a natural facility, really?
Yes, it's a sort of native talent, you'd call it, I think. There was no barriers between music, poetry, painting, art as communication, and communication as art.
I thought I said meaningless, but I said just to reach you too.
And what are you going to read for us?
Well, just so happens, George, I've got a copy of my book here, and I'll read a poem, what is called Alex Speaking. He is putting it lightly when he says, quabbling the grass, strabby down the soddy flays, a mower mat a mass, a monk a mink a minibus, a marmalady moon, a Mickey mended multiplus, a mighty midgie spoon. And so I traddled onward, caring not a care. Onward, 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 my friends, and glory for the 59th! Actually, it's the 39th, or a goop.
And because my role in society, or any artist or poet's role, is to try and express what we all feel, not to tell people how to feel, not as a preacher, not as a leader, but as a reflection of us all. And it's like, that's the job of the artist in society. Artists must reflect what we all are. That's what it's about, artists, or poets, or whatever you want to call it.
It was till then.
Try it again. There was one or two little discrepancies.
There was just the one, wasn't there?
It was great. It was really great.
Well,
let me tell you.
Couldn't I go from there, you know? Cause it...
Yeah, sure. We can go back if you want, John. Yeah,
no.
You're doing great.
Because that one was perfect, wasn't it?
Because I always consider my work one piece, whether it be with Beatles, David Bowie, Elton John, Yoko Ono, And I consider that my work won't be finished until I'm dead and buried, and I hope that's a long, long time.
Did he? Oh, that's very nice indeed.
Hello?
He said, I know what it's like to be dead.
She said, I know what it's like to be dead. I know what it is to be sad. Like I've never been born. I said, put all that crap in your head. I know what it is to be mad. And it's making me feel like my trousers are torn.
She said, you don't understand what I said.
The Beatles appeared once more on Top Gear in November 1964 to preview the songs on Beatles for Sale and to promote both sides of their new single.
I'm a loser, I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be. Of all the love I have won or have lost, there is one love I should never have crossed. Was a girl in a million, my friend. I should have known she would win in the end. I'm a loser, and I lost someone who's near to me. I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be.
It's just natural. It's not a great disaster. People keep talking about it as if it's the end of the earth. It's only a rock group that split up. It's nothing important.
Before we hear another song, fellas, there are a few things I'd like to ask you. First of all, do you ever get tired of being Beatles?
Sometimes
I get a bit lonely now.
I told people 20 years ago, whenever it was, I'm not going to be singing She Loves You when I'm 30. I was 30 last year, and it was then when I broke the band up, or I decided to leave. I don't know when they decided to leave. Whatever, that's when it happened.
Is there anybody going to listen to my story? All about the girl who came to stay.
That was it. The old gang was over the moment they met her. You know that song?
Yeah.
Those wedding bells are breaking up that old gang of mine. I didn't consciously know it at the time, but that's what was going on. As soon as I met her, that was the end of the boys. You know? And it just so happened the boys were well known and weren't just the local guys at the bar. These were guys that everybody else knew, but it was the same thing, you know. That's all over for that. Mm-hmm. But then everybody got so upset about it and angry, but we were so involved in each other, we just went and made the record and did bed-ins and sort of blasted our way through it.
Went to bed with this guy that I liked, and suddenly the next morning I see these three guys standing in with resentful eyes, you know. I mean, three relatives suddenly appearing, you know. So it was incredible.
Not the bully Beatles. Let's have no more Beatles, Christianity or Bob Dylan.
Okay.
Let's make that, you know, it all becomes the same thing. Right.
I don't believe in Beatles. Just believe in me.
on me.
Nobody controls me. I'm uncontrollable. The only one that can control me is me, and that's just barely possible. But that's what life is about. So for all you folks out there who think you know me or you have some part of me because of the music, and then you think that I'm being controlled like a dog on a leash because I do things with her, then screw you. I'm not here for you, I'm here for me and her, and now the baby. I would say I'm baking bread, you know. And they'd say, ha, ha, what are you really doing?
Yeah.
I said, well, I'm looking after the baby. No, no, but what else do you do? Yeah. I said, yeah, are you kidding? Because, yeah, and there were no secret projects in the basement because bread and babies, as every housewife everywhere knows, is a full-time job.
Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans.
The joy is still there when I see Sean. You know, he didn't come out my belly, but my God, you know, I made his bones because I attended to every meal. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he swims like a fish is because I took him to the Y, I took him in the ocean, mm-hmm. I'm so proud of all those. And he is my biggest pride.
He was born on October the 9th, which I was, so we're almost like twins.
Put your mango, sweet name, sweetest little thing I've ever seen.
The funny thing, if I'm feeling depressed, he sort of picks up on it, and he starts getting that way. So it's like I can no longer afford to have artistic depressions, which usually produced a miserable song, but it was something I could use, you know. So now I have a sort of more reason to stay healthy and bright. When I was singing and writing this and working with her, I was visualizing all the people of my age group from the 60s.
That's true.
Being in their 30s and 40s now, just like me, and having wives and children, and having gone through everything together, I'm singing to them. I hope the young kids like it as well, but I'm really talking to the people that grew up with me. I'm saying, here I am now. How are you? How's your relationship going? Did you get through it all? Wasn't the 70s a drag, you know? Here we are. Well, let's try and make the 80s good, you know?
More John Ono Lennon in a minute on Hearing Voices.
From NPR, this is hearingvoices.com.
We continue with John Ono Lennon on Hearing Voices from NPR.
Must have been a sweet dream brought you here. Brought you through the sorrow and the tears.
Because it's still up to us to make what we can of it. It's not out of our control. I still believe in love, peace. I still believe in positive thinking. While there's life, there's hope.
Sail upon the ocean. Sail with me.
Now, maybe in the 60s we were naive, and like children, everybody went back to their room and said, well, we didn't get a wonderful world of just flowers and peace and happy chocolate, and it wasn't just pretty and beautiful all the time, and that's what everybody did. We didn't get everything we wanted, just like babies, and everybody went back to their rooms and sulked, and we're just going to play rock and roll and not do anything else. We're going to stay in our rooms, and the world is a nasty, horrible place because it didn't give us everything we cried for, right? Crying for it wasn't enough. The thing the 60s did was show us the possibility and the responsibility that we all had.
Do you need anybody? I need somebody to love. Do you need anybody? I need somebody to love. That's my favorite song.
Very good.
Who was saying, I need somebody to love? You?
I don't have to ring her, but Paul and I are singing with him.
What's the song, Paul?
What would
you think if I sang in a song?
Sang out of tune. Oh, a little help from my friend.
But I don't buy that, you know, my career is so important that I'll deal with the kids later, bit, which I already did with my first marriage, my first child, and I kind of regret it. My other son by my first marriage is 17. I don't remember seeing him as a child. It didn't even enter, like most guys are 24, 25, they're too intent on their career, really.
Well, that's how I like it, too.
All the little boys and girls living in this crazy world, all they really need from you is maybe some love.
I don't have any hankering to be looked upon as a sex object. Male rock and roll singer. I like to look good and I like to be attractive. And, you know, I enjoy the macho part of rock. But I don't have any need to be the idol. I like it to be known that, yes, she kicked me out. It took me a long time to get back in. And, yeah, I looked after the baby and I made the bread and I was a house husband and let them understand that, you know. And I'm proud of it. And it's the wave of the future, you know. And I'm glad to be in on the forefront of that too. And I'm interested in ourselves, the family, and making some music and trying to make something that we are proud of.
Dream. That's the Beatles story, isn't it? That's Yoko's story. That's what I'm saying now. That not to put it on leaders and parking meters. Don't expect Carter or Reagan or John Lennon or Yoko Ono or Bob Dylan or Jesus Christ to come and do it for you. You have to do it yourself.
Following is not what it's about, but leaving messages of this is what's happening to us. Hey, what's happening to you? Sending postcards and letters is what we do.
So this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over. And you won't just be gone.
Well, do you have any special thoughts for Christmas?
Well, Yoko, it is Christmas, and my special thoughts, of course, turn towards eating.
All right, so eating. Well, what do you like to eat?
Well, I'd like some cornflakes prepared by Parisian hands, and I'd like it blessed by Hare Krishna mantra.
Take two!
That is good. That's part of our policy, is not to be taken seriously, because I think our opposition, whoever they may be, in all their manifest forms, don't know how to handle humour, you know, and we are humorists. What are they? Laurel and Hardy, that's John and Yoko. And we stand a better chance under that guise, because all the serious people like Martin Luther King and Kennedy and Gandhi got shot. I'd like to live to ripe old age with Yoko only, you know. And I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know how I'd feel at the moment, but I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
We used to say, well, we want to do a commercial for peace on the front page of the papers instead of a commercial for war. And the reporters are going, But it didn't matter what the reporters said, right, because our commercial went out irrespective.
That's right.
I mean, they were saying funny things about us, but that wasn't the point. The commercial went out anyway.
A lot of people also feel that if everyone goes to bed and stays in bed for a week or a few days for peace, as a protest for peace, that the whole country will come to a standstill.
Well, wouldn't it be better than producing arms and bombs? Imagine if the American army stayed in bed for a week and the Vietnamese army, or Nixon and
Kosygin and Sherman. Now imagine it, if the whole world stayed in bed, there'd be peace for a week and they might get to feel what it was like. The tension would be released.
You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us.
We both have visions of a quaint little cottage by the seashore, and us looking at our old movies and saying, remember the bed in, and the world will be peaceful. And if the world isn't peaceful when we die, if world peace isn't a reality when we die, we'll probably be back to try again. We'll have to keep doing it till we get it, you know. So we'll be back.
Oh, I know I'll never lose affection. Stop and think about them.
That portrait was produced by Barrett Golding at KGLT Bozeman with mix help from Coulter Langan. Archive recordings are courtesy of the BBC, the CBC, Chicago's Museum of Broadcast Communications, Group W Productions, Rolling Stone Magazine, Apple, Capital, EMI, and Polydor Records. This is Hearing Voices with John Ono Lennon. I'm Lynn Neary. Born John Winston Lennon, October 9, 1940, died John Ono Lennon, December 8, 1980. When he died, I was living in a town that felt like nowhere to me. I was just beginning my work in radio, and my life seemed in a state of suspended animation as I waited for the next step to become clear. New York was my home, and the last place I'd lived in New York was the Upper West Side, not far from where John and Yoko lived. Once, walking down Broadway, they swept past me, moving quickly, wrapped around each other, as if to keep warm. It happened so fast I could hardly believe it was them, but it was. Another time, I stopped for a bowl of soup at a local restaurant, and John was there, just a few feet away. I could barely breathe, much less talk. No one could. When he left, the whole restaurant exhaled, and everyone began chattering wildly. We'd held on to our New York cool as long as we could, but once he'd left, we had to let it go. So when I heard that John Lennon had been killed, shot by an assassin outside his apartment building in my old neighborhood, I could picture it all in my mind. The taxicab pulling up in front of the elegant old building, the doorman coming out to greet him, the gunshot, the chaos. I called my oldest friend, who lived 1,000 miles away. We turned on our radios, in both our corners of the world, there was nothing but Beatles music, up and down the dial.
like endless rain into a paper cup. This little while they pass, they slip away across the universe.
We talked and listened for hours to the sound of our youth forever altered. It was the same for so many of us.
Also at the Dakota, it appears an impromptu memorial is being staged right now. There's hundreds of Beatles fans outside mourning.
But it was always for peace.
Do you remember where you were when you heard the news? That's the question Paul Ingalls asked people about the day John Lennon died.
December 8th, 1980, I was in the United States Navy at the time. I was aboard the aircraft carrier Ranger. We were on station in the North Arabian Sea. I was going down to what I would call maintenance control, get information through the night, and usually about 2 or 3 in the morning, the ship's little rag, the aboard the Ranger called the Top Gun Gazette, would come out, usually 3 or 4 pages, and I still have it 20 years later. Title: John Lennon Shot to Death in New York. AP: John Lennon, the former Beatle, was shot to death in New York City Monday night. The shooting occurred outside Lennon's apartment building on the city's Upper West Side. Lennon, who just had his 40th birthday in October, was rushed by police car to Roosevelt Hospital. It was there he was pronounced dead.
December 8th, 1980, I do remember. I was working as a bartender at the time, working nights, and it was a Monday night, and I went into the bar, and the Monday Night Football was on the big screen TV.
That John Lennon, a member of the famed Beatles, maybe the best-known member, was shot twice in the back outside of his apartment.
And Howard Cosell was saying something about the terrible tragedy that happened to John Lennon in New York City tonight.
An unspeakable tragedy.
And pretty quickly it became apparent that there had been a terrible tragedy and that John Lennon had been murdered.
And this guy comes running in and he said, John Lennon's been killed. And I went out to my car and turned on the radio, and all the way across the dial you heard Beatles songs, and it was as if the, you know, the world had stopped.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Hold on.
I was out.
Now I'm just going to raise this so as it's nearer the bass strings than the top string. Paul's broken at last, broken at last. Paul's broken at last. He's broke today. Okay. Oh, you ready, Macca? 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Here I stand, head in hand, turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on. Feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, hey, you've got to hide.
Favorite Lennon tracks? Actually, you can usually go back to the Beatles and tell which one was mainly a Lennon song or a McCartney song. And one that really hit me, You've Got to Hide Your Love Away. It was very simple, I think a nice little love song, and I thought it was very straight to the point and Lennon from the heart.
Hey, you've got to hide your love away. How can I even try? I can never win. Hearing them, seeing them in the state I'm in. would she say to me? Love will find a way. Gather round, all you clowns, let me hear you say. Hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away.
I was at home when I heard the news about John Lennon, and I remember very clearly thinking with a sinking feeling, this is the end. Our hopes for the Beatles possibly ever getting back together are completely dashed. This is the end.
December 8th, 1980, I was laying on a mattress in Upland, California, watching television about, it must have been about 7 or 8 p.m., and I was strung out on heroin, and the news comes on and says that John Lennon had died, and me and a bunch of other junkies couldn't believe it. It was, you were incredibly sad. You were upset and depressed for all of humanity, you know, that these kind of things can take place.
On December 8th, 1980, I was at a grocery store when the checkout lady came by and said, did you hear that John Lennon was just shot? And she said it was either John Lennon or Jack Lemmon. She couldn't remember. And I remember going out to my car and turning on the radio and hoping it was Jack Lemmon. But no, it was John Lennon. That night, a local radio station set up a van and some big speakers. And it was a cold night, and a lot of people were staying out there listening to John's music and signing a big sympathy card to Yoko, and I still remember what I signed on it, and it was a John Lennon quote that said, last night the wife said, oh boy, when you're dead, you don't take nothing with you but your soul.
I remember being in the Chapultepec Park area of Mexico City where there was a candlelight vigil going on. My guess is that there were probably a million people. I had no idea at the time how popular and how revered John Lennon was in Mexico.
Well, it was early morning. I can remember that my father called up and said, John Lennon's been shot. Turn on the radio. And I couldn't really believe it. And I was eagerly anticipating the birth of my first child. And at that time, the baby was overdue. And so I can remember thinking with this note of sadness, oh no, I hope the baby doesn't come today. What a terrible way to start your life, or such a bad omen that such an amazing figure is gone. I can remember thinking, why would anybody want to kill this man?
On December 8th, 1980, I was midway through my pregnancy with my first child. And when we got the news that John Lennon had been shot, I remember that my husband burst into tears, and it was very emotional for us, not only because we had admired John Lennon since we were in high school, but also because we knew that he was leaving behind a 5-year-old son. All-time favorite John Lennon song has to be Imagine. I think that's probably a lot of people's favorite.
I'd known good friends who'd chosen to get married to Imagine.
I think the one song that affected me the most that Lennon did was Imagine, because it gave a sense of hope.
I was working at a record store in Chicago at the time of John Lennon's death, and we had this huge stack of Double Fantasy. It had just come out and was a fairly well-received album. And I'm looking at this amount of albums that we have here, and I'm thinking about John Lennon. I'm thinking, he can't die. He's one of the Beatles. He's invincible. And then 2 days later, when I came back to work, those albums were gone. They were completely gone. People had come in and completely bought them out.
Imagine no possession. I wonder if we can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood and sisterhood of man.
I would say that John Lennon crosses my mind. Every time I do something political, every time I do something I believe in or teach my child about what I believe in, I don't want to put him up on a pedestal because he wasn't a perfect human. I think about him.
The day John Lennon died, as remembered by Scott McNichol, Daniel Callis, Martin Goldsmith, Jane Bloom, Mark Weber, Jim Palmer, John Scariano, Bonnie Renfro, Mary Oishi, Bob Rauchi, and Emily Zambello. The piece was produced by Paul Ingalls at Cedar Creek Studios and KUNM Albuquerque.
I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.
This tape comes to us from The Professor, host of WFMU's radio program, The Audio Kitchen. On the night of December 8th, 2000, 20 years after Lennon died, he recorded these mourners gathered at Strawberry Fields in Central Park, New York City.
But I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.
So he was tough and cocky, brilliant and warm, outrageously funny and brutally honest. He didn't want to be an icon, but he is.
People say I'm crazy.
What's that you're listening to? My 9-year-old daughter just asked.
Doing what I'm doing.
She knows the Beatles, but not much really about John Lennon. How do I explain what made him different from the others?
Give me all kinds of warnings.
I think I'll just let her find out for herself.
Save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange.
Surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game. Ah, people say I'm lazy, dreaming my life away. Well, they give me all kinds of advice, designed to enlighten me. Tell them that I'm doing fine, watching the shadows on the wall. Oh, don't you miss the big time, boy, you're no longer on the ball. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the merry-go-round. I just have to let it go. I just have to let it go.
I'm Lynn Neary. There are links to a half-hour version of Paul Engels' The Day John Lennon Died and to works by all the producers in this hour at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.